Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing another really nice day. It's been a little cloudy, but just, I mean, it feels like springtime. Just a gorgeous day, and hope everybody's doing well. It is a game day for Auburn basketball. The Oklahoma Sooners coming in. A late start over at Neville Arena. 8 o'clock tip. Are you trying to slap him? I didn't know if there was like an insect buzzing around Drew, or Dan was just going to pop him on the way in. Who knows? That's that kind of day. I mean, yeah, welcome in to the Tuesday edition of The Drive, everybody. Bill, Dan, got his mic on now.
There was in fact, a little spider web there that I was reaching and knocking out. But then it did occur to me that I could get very close, and Drew had still not noticed that my hand was there. So we, you know,
yeah,
it did look as though I was about to give forehand a backhand, right?
That's what it, or a forehand. It looked like you were doing either one.
So. I've told him, you know what, and we can float this one publicly, but I've told him that he should switch. As much as I like Drew Crew, I think his team needs to be the backhand. I think that's the
I think that's a good idea.
We might switch that one at the draft.
Yeah,
might start doing business that way.
Well, it won't be long. This would be such
we're
perfect.
We're halfway through conference.
This would be such perfect baseball weather we've had here the last couple of days.
We're halfway through conference play in basketball. And
Auburn will be after tonight. Yeah. A lot of teams already are.
Yeah, and it is, it's been ever since the snow melted, right? It's just been perfect out around here.
Really has. Just look ahead a week, though. Next week is the opening week for college baseball. And there's a lot of rain and cold weather forecast.
How cold is cold, though?
I believe by Sunday, the low is supposed to be 31.
Okay.
So, I mean, you know, a high of 54, a low of 31, and some rain, stuff like that over the weekend. Hope not.
So ugly stuff on the horizon potentially, but enjoy this because it's been we've had some 80 degree days.
I've seen, and I think it's supposed to be 80 again tomorrow. I mean, so many folks out taking advantage, walking. I mean, a lot of yard prep and things like that going on. I'm not even into that yet, but no, it's been great outside.
How did the plants take to the winter? Some of the outdoors. I know
they've been in the garage. A lot of the important ones have been in the garage.
Would not have made it.
No, they absolutely wouldn't have made it. I don't even know if they will now. So, but we'll find that out in another month or so. I am not going to be tempted like I have been before of dragging some things out and thinking, oh man, it's 75, 80 degrees. Let me bring them out, because that's even worse for them if they think, oh, I can start growing, and then you have to either cover them up or bring them back inside. Auburn will be halfway done through the conference tonight, and they are solid favorites over Oklahoma. Double-digit favorites, somewhere in the 16 to 18 point range over an Oklahoma team that is playing pretty good basketball after really getting off to a bumpy start. They lost their first four conference games. They've now won three of their last four, and they come in with a pretty explosive offense that Auburn will be facing tonight.
Oh, certainly. I mean, Oklahoma, even though they've had an up and down season in conference play, they've got a couple of real weapons, and I think if they play, I mean, it would be a pretty significant upset for Oklahoma to win tonight. I mean, they're close to a 20-point underdog, right? It's over 15.
Yeah, it was 17 and a half.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty serious upset if someone can if Oklahoma were to pull it off. We've seen some pretty wacky things happening lately in college basketball. And if Auburn, you know, Auburn hasn't really had a night, you know, Auburn has not had a night where the offense has been especially cold from deep, and they've had a tough time around the rim. right? Like, I don't think you've necessarily had, because, I mean,
Tennessee game's probably the best, I mean, the closest they've come.
Tennessee would be, you know, the closest, and Tennessee did as good a job contesting mm-hmm. against Auburn as anyone has in SEC play this season. But I just, I don't know, the path to, it feels like Oklahoma has a very difficult, very narrow path to victory. It exists. Oklahoma has a puncher's chance tonight, but Auburn is a significant favorite for very good reasons.
Yes, and we'll be checking in with the voice of the Tigers here shortly. Andy Burcham said he'd let us know when the shoot around is done, so he's watching the shoot around right now and getting some game prep. And as a matter of fact, that's Andy's. If you heard the little bling, that was Andy right there. He's ready, so we can we will call the voice of the Tigers now, and we'll go ahead and get him on the air and get his thoughts on the Tigers, 8-0 on the season, and Oklahoma coming in. You mentioned, they've got some weapons. They have one of the better freshmen around in Jeremiah Fears, a player that Auburn was recruiting when he and was recruiting him pretty hard when he was expected to be part of the 2025 class, but he. He was able to move up his graduation and graduate early and chose Oklahoma over Auburn.
Couple of Alabama guys on the Oklahoma roster.
There absolutely well. Are. One of whom was right there at the top of Auburn's transfer portal guard list in Duke Miles.
Yeah, and the other one is near the top of the conference in points per game.
Yep.
Right, you're talking about a guy averaging 18 points a game this season. I think it's closer to 20 if you isolate just league games. And so yeah, Jalen Moore from Birmingham. I mean, that's a real player who he started his career he was at George Tech, right? He was Miles's
teammate.
He was Miles's teammate for a couple of seasons at Georgia Tech, and now he's in the SEC playing at Oklahoma. And they would love to. You'd like to say that it's special for Jalen and Duke to come back to the state of Alabama, and I'm sure it is. I'm sure they'll have people in the stands that don't get to go to very many Oklahoma games and see them. At the same time, it was probably special to go to Tuscaloosa. And Oklahoma got
run out of the gym.
Yeah, they got
opening game. They were unbeaten, demolished. Weren't they? Weren't they 13-0?
Yeah, they came
opening
in
opening conference play, and it was 107-79.
They were one of the surprises because they'd just beaten Michigan mm-hmm. in the Jordan game. By the way, Auburn, I mentioned this yesterday, Bill, both of Auburn's opponents this week, Jordan brand teams, Oklahoma and Florida, I believe two of the very few Jordan brand teams in college athletics, and they both happen to be on Auburn's schedule in this final year of the Under Armour deal. But it's Oklahoma was they were one of the stories
of
going into conference play, and it was a pretty rough go.
Rough start, lost their first four, but as I said, I mean they picked it up. They've won three of the last four. Let's head to the Drive hotline and welcome in our regular Tuesday guest. Here in the early going, that of course is the voice of the Tigers, Andy Burcham. Hey, Andy, how you doing?
Good morning or good afternoon, I guess I should say, isn't it? It's a beautiful afternoon here in Auburn.
Oh,
getting ready for a late night start between Auburn and Oklahoma tonight.
Yeah, and I mean, of course, that's one of the things when you're you're a marquee team, you'll play prime time, and that's what Auburn's got tonight with the 8 o'clock tip against the Sooners.
Yeah, it won't be Auburn's last 8 o'clock game either, but really an interesting matchup tonight because as well as Auburn plays offensively, its calling card is still its defense, and its defense will be tested by one of the potential high-powered offenses in the Southeastern Conference in Oklahoma tonight.
They shoot it really well. I mean, they shoot a little better than Auburn does from the three. They're nearly 50% team-wise from the floor. And the advantage Auburn should have, Andy, I would think, would be in the front court. I mean, they just don't have the size that Auburn does.
That is true, Bill. And it was really the same thing Saturday at Ole Miss. Mm-hmm. I mean, how many times did you notice when the ball would go to the low post? Now, I don't think they play quite the same defenses, but how many times did we see Jani Broome, although he was double-teamed by guards.
Right.
On Saturday. at Ole Miss. And that played, eventually it played to Auburn's advantage in that win against Ole Miss. But this is an Oklahoma team that is not nearly as big as Auburn. Godwin on the inside is 6'10", but they don't have the size of Janai and Dillon on the low post tonight. They are big enough, though, at the guards. You guys talked about the guards and Fears. They're 6'4", 6'4", 6'5", I believe, starting at the guards. And they really start four guards because Jalen Moore is 6'7", but really plays like a swing player for Oklahoma. And the thing I think that concerns Bruce Pearl as much as anything is how well Oklahoma gets out and runs the break. And there have been a couple times this year where Auburn did not get back in time, and especially early in ball games. It took a while to adjust to the other team's speed, and this Oklahoma team can get out and run, and that's what they want to do with the offense. It's not like you're playing a team that runs the shot clock down and looks for a final shot. This team wants to get out. It wants to score in the first 10 seconds while it has the ball on offense tonight. Auburn's got to do a much better job of getting back tonight against this Oklahoma ball club.
Andy, I don't want to gloss over Saturday because, you know, as Bruce said, it was one of, you know, it was the best road win of the season thus far for Auburn. And what struck me, and Saturday wasn't the only game where this was true. You know, you could also say this about the LSU game last week, but how many moments there were in Saturday's game where Auburn absolutely had to have points on a possession, and on those possessions, they just couldn't be stopped. The composure of the team, the ability to answer every single Ole Miss flurry with some offense of their own, and the team's their ability to come through in big moments with difficult shots. It was championship stuff on display in Oxford.
Last two Auburn games on the road, both times Auburn has faced sellout crowds at Stegman Coliseum in Athens, and then last Saturday, the third largest crowd in the pavilion history, in the short history of that facility in Oxford. And their students were there 2 hours before game time. It's the earliest that I remember students getting into a gym. And perhaps I'm not remembering well, but that they were there really, really early, and so were we. We were there early to set up our equipment, so they were there early. I mean, that place was pumped last week. And I just felt like the place was going to explode, especially in the second half, if Ole Miss ever came back to tie the game or take the lead in the game. And it had the lead down to one at least one time, mm-hmm. and had about three or four possessions where it could have tied or taken the lead in the second half. And Auburn got a stop and then immediately answered at the other end, whether it was Chad Baker Mazar or Miles Kelly or Denver Jones or Chad Baker driving to the basket, because Janai didn't get his first basket of the second half until late
right
in the second half of play. And then Dillon Cardwell goes 4 of 5 from the free throw line, which is enormous for Dillon, and ends up with a double-double, including a career-high 13 rebounds. But I really felt that it was just an answer game for Auburn, because every time Ole Miss made a run and the crowd was just waiting for that one big basket to explode, Auburn would silence the crowd momentarily with a big, big basket. It was one of the funnest games that I have called, home or away, in a long, long time, just because of the way Auburn responded every time Ole Miss made a run last Saturday.
You know, they mentioned on the telecast about their students camping out and how big it was. Right. Obviously, if they could have knocked off the number one team, and as you said, and Dan was talking about, I mean, they would cut it. They would make, though, they'd have a, it seemed like they had so many 5 or 6 point little mini runs and be able right. to cut it to one or two, and then Auburn would score. Auburn would not just answer, but then they'd make a stop and they'd push it back up to 6, 7, or 8. And then, you know, it was just back and forth, but they were never able to get over that hump. And I think you addressed some of the things. I mean, the anticipation there, You could feel it just watching and you know, listening to the broadcast.
It was a great atmosphere. It was a great environment for college basketball. And listen, we'll see another great one tonight at Neville Arena. We always do in front of the jungle. But my hat's off to the Ole Miss folks, man. They were there. There were a bunch of Auburn people there. The Auburn family, the witnesses, as Bruce likes to call it, they were there, and you could hear them. It's great to be an Auburn Tiger, and you could certainly hear them late in that ball game. But
you could hear Auburn the AUs when Dylan made the free throws.
Right. Well, exactly. But it Ole Miss came to play in every regard on Saturday, and Auburn overcame that and scored 92 points, by the way, because, you know, of late, the offense just hadn't been there consistently for Auburn. Auburn scored 92.
Well, 14 of 28 from three. Yeah, I mean, it was phenomenal.
Exactly. And we're not going to see that game in and game out, but to see that on the road in that environment really impressed me about this Auburn ball club.
And Andy, you've called some games there in Oxford where, you know, it was fairly lifeless in the building. I know, talking to Justin Ferguson, who's been to the last couple of games, you know, it's a pretty remarkable turnaround as far as what they've, you know, what Chris Beard and the athletic department there have been able to, you know, they've been able to turn that basketball program into. Still can't, you know, it would have been huge for them to knock off the number one team, and, you know, it would have been a sort of a moment to show they've arrived, and they're going to have to wait for that moment because Auburn's team can, I mean, yeah, it was in a different, whether it's Chad, whether it's Chaney, whether it's Dylan, who had, you know, one of his
maybe his best game.
Yeah, he's played in more Auburn games than anybody, and that might have been the best one of all of them. And Jani Broome, who takes another Player of the Week award puts it in the closet.
Right. Yeah. It was just a well-rounded Auburn win on Saturday. And guys, I mean, that has been in spite of the atmosphere there at the pavilion, that's been a tough. Auburn's had to come from double digits down several times of late at Ole Miss, and have been able to do that and been successful. And that wasn't the case. Both teams, I think, had 9-0 runs in the game. But once Auburn got the lead a quarter of the way through the first half, and I thought the two threes at the end of the first half, Ole Miss cut the lead to one with a minute to go in the first half. And Denver, I think it was Denver, hit a shot from the left wing, and then Jani Broome hit almost a buzzer beater from the right wing. And all of a sudden, it goes from a one-point game and the place going crazy to a seven-point game, and all the momentum goes into the Auburn locker room at the half.
Yeah, they have handled that. They seem to thrive on the pressure. They really, not just handle the pressure, they seem to thrive on it. And look, there's going to be, again, I mean, I'm not being negative. There's going to be a loss somewhere along in here, but man, these guys just have handled every challenge so well, and tonight's another one of those. You got to make sure they've been great about not looking ahead, because you've got a huge one coming up Saturday afternoon with the Gators coming into town. But again, this Oklahoma team has played pretty darn well lately, winning three of their last four, and they've got, as we were talking a while ago, a couple of Alabama natives and another player that Bruce and Auburn recruited very heavily, and Jeremiah Fears, before he reclassified and selected Oklahoma.
Well, there's all the motivation in the world for this Oklahoma ball club tonight, because they're at the number one team in the unanimous number one team in the country right now. And you come off of a huge win on the road. You turn around quickly. It's a late night game here at Auburn. I really don't get the idea, though, that this team is looking beyond Oklahoma to Florida coming in. We do that.
Right.
I don't think this team is. I don't think Bruce is at this point. And that doesn't mean that Oklahoma isn't going to be a challenge, but it's because of the potential for this team's offense. I mean, they can flat out go off offensively against anybody. And they'd love to do it tonight against Auburn. And if Auburn doesn't do a good job of getting back in defense, and that's where I think Auburn is at its best. How many times have you heard Bruce at his press conferences talk about teams don't want to play us in our half-court defense? Well, Oklahoma doesn't want to either. And the aim is they're not going to let Auburn get into its half-court defense tonight with as much as Oklahoma wants to run. Now, here's one thing that can stop Oklahoma from running is if Auburn runs its offense and runs it well, and instead of getting rebounds and running, they're getting the ball out of the net and getting up the floor.
True, and then of course when if Auburn crashes the board as well as they have the last couple of ball games, that'll make it more difficult for the Sooners too.
Well, and Auburn's bigger. You talked about it earlier. Auburn's bigger underneath. I think Auburn will rebound better underneath tonight. So, and here's another thing. And Randall and I we just came from shoot around, and Randall Dickey and I were sitting there just talking a little bit about that Ole Miss game, and kind of reminiscing. That was such a fun game to be able to call. And boy, when those come on the road as well, to me, they're even more special. But we have seen this Auburn team win, and it's not the same formula game in and game out. We've seen Auburn win two games without Jahni Broome. That certainly wasn't on your bingo card, was it? We've seen Auburn win a game in the low 50s, and that wasn't on your bingo card. And we have seen this team at times not play its best basketball, but find a way to win it, and not in the style that we saw throughout the non-conference season when Auburn was just going out and dominating teams. And we've seen Auburn do that a time or two in the league, but we've also seen Auburn win games where it doesn't shoot the ball particularly well. And those games in the past, guys, have been the death blow to Auburn. When it didn't shoot the ball well, it likely didn't win that game well. We've seen Auburn not shoot the ball very well against Tennessee. Now, Tennessee's defense has a lot to do with that, but Auburn found a way to win that game by two and then respond with that big win at Ole Miss on Saturday.
The Tim Duncan, Greg Popovich Spurs were renowned for their ability to sort of adapt to your style and still beat you. They could run with the Steve Nash Suns. They could play, you know, they could brawl with the Pistons, you know, whatever they needed to do, you know, whatever style they needed to play, they were still able to do it and win. And you're right, Auburn's been able to adapt to the other team's style and still play. And that's, you know, Mike Tyson said everybody's got a plan till you get punched in the face. And it's like, I think this, like Ole Miss saying they want to play up tempo, I think the level of conditioning, especially for Auburn's backcourt, but also like that sells Chaney and Dillon and Jahni short, right? When you talk about the level of conditioning just in the backcourt, the level of conditioning of this team, like good luck trying to play up tempo consistently against them, because they're gonna run with you and it's not gonna be it's not gonna be as wide open as you think it's gonna be.
Well, and let me take team depth one step in a different direction here. And I agree with what you're saying, Dan. But to me, team depth, especially when it comes to SEC play, isn't just how many guys are you playing in a game, but how many teams would have been deep enough to lose perhaps the National Player of the Year for two games and win with Dillon and Chaney on the inside rather than Dillon and Jahni on the inside and Chaney coming off the bench, and then you add Jaheim Hudson to that mix. I mean, Jaheim Hudson's minutes increased dramatically when Jahni was out of the game. He played one really big stint in the second half and was successful in doing that. But that's what I mean by this team's depth. It's not just the rotation that you see game in and game out. It's what do you have when one of these guys goes out, and unfortunately, or fortunately, now as we've seen it, we know what this team can do without Jahni Broome for a couple ball games.
Yeah, it is such just the epitome of team. I mean, that's what Auburn has. Different guys can step up and have picked the team up when they've been needed to do that. So that's something that again is very special about this team, which is as special a team as we've seen on the plains in a long, long time.
Agreed, Brad. Bill, I think that's exactly right. Because, listen, in years past, as good as some of these teams have been, including the team that previous to this was the number one team in the country, and this squad now has surpassed that team just as far as the number of weeks it's number one. But there were days where Auburn did not shoot the ball particularly well and it was in some trouble. And I'm not saying that if a team shuts down Auburn shooting, Auburn's not into trouble this year, but Auburn has the ability to win that game and win it better or win it more frequently than perhaps it has done in the past.
Oh.
And Saturday, it wasn't just one guy, was it? I mean, Jani had his double-double, and that's what we've come to expect from Jani. But think of the game that Chad Baker Mazzara had, or the shooting, just the fine shooting of Miles Kelly, or Denver Jones in this ballgame. And then add Dylan to this list. Auburn can beat you in a number of ways. It's not just one cookie-cutter way for this Auburn ball club to win.
You know, it's almost surprising when I don't look up and see four or five guys in double figures. And it's not always the same four or five. I mean, it was five in double figures Saturday with Tahad having nine.
Right. And yet Tahad played an enormous part in that ball game for Auburn. I mean, Auburn turned the ball over six times in less than the first 4 minutes of that ball game. And then I don't think it had a turnover for the rest of the half. Auburn brought Denver Jones. Bruce brought Denver Jones out of the game. I don't think Denver wanted to come out of the game, but he did. And then Auburn settled down, and all of a sudden, against the best team in the league at forcing a turnover for the last 14 or 16 minutes of the first half, it didn't have a turnover. Part of this is that Auburn is an experienced, mature basketball team. There's 10 seniors on this team. And listen, we're all thrilled with what Tahad Pettiford has done as a true freshman. But this team is led by its seniors. And there are times in a game where it plays like a mature team. Yeah, things don't go right for the first 4 minutes. You make an adjustment, you find your way through it, and then all of a sudden you find your rhythm offensively and you end up scoring 92 points on the road in front of the third largest crowd in that school's history.
Looking forward to it. 8 o'clock, which means 7:30 airtime on the network, including Wings 94.3 this evening.
Indeed.
Andy, I was saying it's a shame we're not playing baseball today or softball in the last couple of days. This is perfect. I'm afraid to look ahead, but it's getting here. It's going to be here. I mean, softball this week, baseball next week.
Right. Yeah, the Malvo era opens, the Chris and Kate Malvo era opens on Friday at J&B Moore Field as Auburn plays host to Southern Illinois in the first of several tournaments that the Tigers will host. Those broadcasts, by the way, will be on WEGL 91.1 again this year. And then next Friday, Auburn and Holy Cross, I think we'll know by Tuesday of next week likely what game time. They really want these games to be 6 o'clock to let families get home from work and school and get out and get to the ballpark for the unveiling of the brand new Plainsman Park. But we will find that out for sure probably by next Tuesday. We'll find out the game time.
Mm-hmm.
But really looking forward to Auburn baseball. I think this is going to be a dramatically better team that Butch Thompson fields this year. I mean, it's got the third best recruiting class, the fifth best portal class in the country. Not just in the SEC, in the country. And a lot of these youngsters and new players are going to be playing important roles for this Auburn baseball team. Listen, Bill, you and I have talked about it many, many times. I mean, how much we look forward to baseball season, period, whether it's Auburn baseball or Major League Baseball. And we're about a week and a half away from that right now.
Yeah, Andy, do you think you could maybe get us on the list up for the seats in left field? You know, we know an important guy.
Stand along the wall there, Dan. Oh, yeah, that's a standing rail there.
I think we maybe need to do a show from up there. I'm thinking maybe I think we got to be up there on the brand new seats. It has a name, right? Is it the something wall or the? It's I don't know, the seats have a section. I just saw it on social media, but it's can't wait to see what Plainsman Park looks like for the new season.
I think there's a lot of potential for some broadcasts this year.
Yeah.
Let's just put it that way. All right.
Oh yeah. Speaking of broadcasts, what all is on tap with the network coming up, Andy?
Well, with the Talking Tigers podcast that's running right now, one of Auburn's just all time
absolute great
Susan Nunley.
Yep.
Susan Nunley, who was Auburn's basketball coach for a couple years, has been the PA announcer for Auburn women's basketball for 54 years.
Wow.
Camp War Eagle, cheerleading sponsor, longtime director of intramurals at Auburn. She was the director of SEC officials for a while. The Nun, as she is affectionately known, is on the Talking Tigers podcast this week. Our podcast with Larry Blakeney, who will go in along with Greg Carr, to the College Football Hall of Fame later on this year. My interview with Larry Blakeney starts Monday on the Talking Tigers podcast. Following that, one of the Auburn members of the 1999 team and a current member of this coaching staff, Bryant Smith, all coming up. And then the week after that, Sonny DeShera, Sonny D, will be talking about his 1 year at Auburn and that magical trip to Omaha. So that's all the Talking Tigers podcast. Thursday night is Tiger Talk. They'll be at the arena for the Auburn women's game against Texas A&M. Brad and Jacob Hillman will have that. I'm going to be working with Auburn baseball and an event over at Jordan-Hare Stadium for the On to Victory folks on Thursday. And then, of course, broadcast tonight starting at 7:30. And then on Saturday, Auburn and Florida at 3, and our broadcast begins at 2:30. I'm sure I'm leaving something out. I apologize.
Great job, though. No, I think you hit the highlights for sure, Andy. We really appreciate you spending a little time with us.
You bet.
Look forward to the broadcast this evening. Have a great broadcast, and we'll talk to you again next time.
Bye, Andy.
Well, my pleasure, guys. Have a great one. War Eagle.
Andy Burcham, voice of the Tigers, joining us. It's the War Eagle wall. Yes, as we both looked up there, the left field wall.
What do you think? Maybe we sneak into a show?
I'm under the impression that there aren't seats, that it's just a standing room.
Yeah, we could bring chairs. We could find some chairs. They'll find some chairs for us.
The plan is it's going to be a sort of a milling.
If I say the magic words, Bill Cameron, I think a couple of chairs materialize.
I just don't want to carry them up. That's a long way to carry chairs. Good.
Yeah.
Up.
Oh boy.
All right, we need to get. We definitely
get someone
need
on the team. Get someone on the team to throw them up there. Maybe see the strongest guy.
You see somebody tear a labrum or something doing that. All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Come on in and join us. You can call us on the Drive Hotline, 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast.
We'll be right back. Come on in here on the Tuesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. At Reynolds Outdoors, they're all about hunting and fishing.
Welcome back into the Drive here on this Tuesday afternoon. Bill and Dan, Drew at the controls.
I always sort of think of Sheryl Crow when you get the music, little music.
I didn't hear any of that one.
This is the Bruce return little strummy. Yeah. The strummy. Did you see any of the Grammys on Sunday night?
No, I recorded it. Have not watched yet.
Some good stuff. Some cool performances. Some unusual performances. More than any other award show. You know, sort of the awards are an oh by the way sort of thing at the Grammys.
Yeah, yeah, and it's just like
it's
that.
I mean, you know, 20, 25 minutes of musical performances, and then they'll hand out an award or two. Chapel Roan wins Best New Artist, which was a competitive category this year with a lot of big names in it, including the fellow who does the Shaboozy, right, the bar song guy, yeah. And Sabrina Carpenter, you know, among other big names in that in that category. It was Kendrick Lamar winning most of the big, you know, Record of the Year, Song of the Year for Not Like Us. He'll be the halftime act this Sunday as well. So a pretty big week. You win Record of the Year and Song of the Year at the Grammy Awards.
And halftime at the Super Bowl.
A week later, you'll be in New Orleans at the halftime of the at the Super Bowl. Forget who won Album of the Year. It was
coming up at the last time I flipped.
Oh, bro, you know what? No, I don't. Beyonce won for the country album. Cowboy Carter won Album of the Year. So, but some cool performances here and there. A lot of Los Angeles related tributes in response to the fires. They had Bruno Mars and Lady Gaga do California Dreamin', which was neat. They opened with I Love L.A. They had a celebrity group. It's, you know what, would have spoken to me more if they'd brought out Randy, but I believe he's had some health problems in the last year or so because he's canceled some of his dates.
He's not been right.
I thought he was on the Jazz Fest lineup in New Orleans. Maybe I'll double check that. But again, I'll say it one more time. I know we got to take a short segment here. If he's healthy enough, Bill, to tour and perform live, the Googe.
Oh, I'd love that.
Right?
Give me some
Randy Newman at the Googe. By the way, I've heard rave reviews about the stuff that they're doing at the Googe of late. So Anyways, great show Sunday night. Check out some of the live performances if you're a fan of those artists involved.
Yeah, we will get to our next break. Sort of try to get caught back up. We're wide open here on the Tuesday Drive. Come on in and join us. Pearl Jam, Dave.
With Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan, Drew at the controls here on this Tuesday afternoon. Auburn basketball coming up tonight. You know, it's funny. I was looking at this the other day, Dan, and it doesn't appear. I mean, there aren't as many just big matchups this week in college basketball. It seemed like there were a ton of ranked matchups last week. The biggest one, I guess, here.
Well, Vanderbilt and Florida would have been a ranked matchup.
Vanderbilt and Florida would have.
If Vanderbilt had held on to their spot in the top 25.
They had played so well.
They're still probably a team that, like, if they can finish 500 in the SEC, it's a remarkable job by Mark Byington, considering what people thought, considering what he inherited, and then considering sort of what people thought of the roster going into the season.
Right.
If he can get them, and if you're at 500, it's like college baseball.
You're 500, you're in.
Yeah.
You're in the tournament. You're probably I mean, if you're 500, you may be a 6-7 seed.
I believe Lenardi updated his bracket today with Texas as a 9 and Vandy as a 10, mm-hmm. and he had
Arkansas was the there were 13 teams.
I take that
in.
Back. I think it might have been like Vandy might have been a 7 in his most
Vandy
recent.
Was.
I think Texas 9, Georgia's a 10,
yes.
and Arkansas is on the wrong side of the bubble.
On the outside looking in on the second four out. Or
yeah, whatever. And I've made this point before, but I would be pessimistic. As much as I like Aza Newell, I would be pessimistic about Georgia as a Cinderella unless I see more from the guards mm-hmm. this month. I just don't know if they're going to be able to beat really good teams with that backcourt. We'll see. Texas, I think, could be a dangerous, underseeded team if they're in the NCAA tournament as a 9, a 10, or an 11. I think Texas has the talent at guard to overwhelm some people with Trey Johnson and Kaluma and Mack is a proven killer in the NCAA tournament.
I was going to say the most highly touted matchup this week is the other guy who right now I would think Bruce Pearl should be strongly considered for Coach of the Year with Auburn's start. But how about Dennis Gates of Missouri?
Right.
I mean, and they go to Knoxville. I think they've got a shot there in Knoxville.
That's going to be a really good one tomorrow night. I mean, yeah. Tennessee, you know, it's still – I mean, Tennessee can be up and down. They at times, their lack of offense can mm-hmm. really – can really bite them, but they're an anaconda defensively too.
They
can choke you out.
They choke you out, or I was going to say they just wear you down.
Yeah,
too. I mean just
maybe it's more of a sleeper hold than a choke hold, right, Bill? Maybe they just slowly squeeze the.
It's uncomfortable, whatever it is. Yeah. It's extremely uncomfortable to play them. All right, 334-321-1390. Who did we have, Drew?
John
is up first on the drive hotline. Hey, John.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing?
Doing fine.
I always want to give a shout-out to those friends of mine at the Sky Bar who pay for these calls coming in. But a couple things real quick. On Wednesday night, the Auburn High Lady Tigers host Opelika in the area tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And Thursday night, Auburn High goes to Central to play Opelika. And we had a great game last week against Central. Against Opelika. We were down 18 points and came back and won in overtime.
Yeah, amazing.
So, but the other thing, Dan, I saw Randy Newman. I think it was at the Roxy. It was not a bigger place, but up in Atlanta. And it was one of the most incredible shows, and I've never seen an audience. You could hear a pin drop when he was talking. Everybody listened, and he is a great storyteller, as you can imagine, as well as just a performer. But it was an incredible show. And I don't know if I'd want to see him at Jazz Fest, but if he's ever in a small room anywhere, I'd try to be there.
Yeah, well, I mean, he is such an unbelievable storyteller in his songs.
It seems like he's really cut down on live performing in the last couple of years. You know, we were looking up some of his recent tour dates, you know, and but no, I think that, you know, a place like the Gouge would be just perfect for his style. And yeah, he's an all-time favorite of mine too, John.
Yeah,
there's a Randy Newman. It's like an online bootleg, but you can find it. He did. There were a couple of times in the 70s around the release of, I guess it might have been the self-titled album. But there he would go to radio stations and just do an hour long show. You know, just play. You know, bring the keyboard
back when
in.
Stations used to have. If they didn't have a piano, they'd have a room big enough. With multiple mics.
There's one at a place called the Boarding House in San Francisco that's just killer. And some of that early 70s Randy Newman is just the best.
Great hearing from you, John. 334-321-1390. Yeah, we'll get one more before we get to our final break of hour number one. And Philly Fanatic is up next. What's up?
You keep talking about the Gouge. Yeah, I understand that their outdoor theater is going to have 3,500 seats. And you remember they had Smokey Robinson there when people were just sitting around in lawn chairs. I think we'll see Randy Newman. I think we'll see a lot of oldies there.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it'd be it's not just exclusively Randy Newman. You're right. You can find a lot of acts that fit that would bring quite a crowd. But yeah, exciting stuff happening in that you know, happy that they're I know they've been running Pretty Woman's been
yes,
advertising.
That's going on right now.
Yeah, that's going on right now, and yeah, a lot of cool stuff happening over there.
All right, two things. You know, the Hall
it's not,
of Fame.
It's not what I thought. It's not what I thought you were gonna
there.
Philly Fanatic. That's not what I thought you were gonna start
I think
the
might
call
get
with.
Something.
Yeah, you might get to some other. You might get to some other stuff also going on this week.
Yeah, I'm headed in that direction. I just thought we'd bring in about the Phillies, and then I'm going to talk about the Eagles.
Sure. What's on your mind?
The Eagles. I like with you know, they have one of the largest offensive linemen, and they're averaging 3.7 yards per run. And I think we're going to see a heavy dose of Saquon Barkley and Hurts. And I like their chances. They're big on defense. They got a couple of Georgia players when they won the national championship up front. And those guys are horses.
I like the Chiefs, but I also have picked against Philly in every playoff game so far.
Yeah, so, of course, everybody has.
So you know what I mean? So yeah, you can take my Chiefs prediction, and maybe on Sunday night, Monday morning, you can crumple it up and you can throw it in the same garbage can that the Packers prediction and who'd they beat in the second round? Was it the Rams?
I think that's right.
Yeah, they beat the Rams, and then they just destroyed the Commanders, and you know, and so I think you know, it's, you know, Kansas City is just such a tough out, but if Philly can get things rolling, you know, I suspect this game's close in the fourth quarter. You know, I think we'll see. You know, it could come down to who makes the big mistake or who makes the huge play.
Well, you know, in the last 3 years, and they were played twice, isn't that correct? For the Super Bowl?
This will be, yeah.
So, Hurts was hurt, and that's why the Eagles didn't end up as the number one seed. So, we'll see how he looked pretty good in the snow, so maybe he'll be able to turn it on.
I saw the stat this weekend from CBS, or the fact that this is the fourth rematch ever between two quarterbacks in a Super Bowl, and the previous three.
Is that all?
Yeah, this is the fourth time two quarterbacks have rematched in the Super Bowl. Bill, the other three were Bradshaw and Roger Staubach. It was Brady and Eli Manning played twice, and Aikman and Jim Kelly played twice. All three of those, one guy went 2-0. So we'll see. So we'll see if a quarterback is going 2-0 in this one too. That would mean the Chiefs win on Sunday against the Eagles.
Well, you know, if the Eagles win, I'll have to change my radio name to Super Philly Fanatic.
Hey, how you feeling about the Phillies with the season around the corner?
Wow! I mean, I like their chances, but I didn't like the fact that they didn't get anybody in the Hall of Fame. I mean, they're stacking up, but, you know, the Mets, too, the guy that owns the Mets, he's one of the richest guys around. You know, he's big time in the stock market, and he's got unlimited pockets, too. So we'll see. But I'd rather see the Braves come up, but they kind of let me down. They really didn't go after anyone. I guess they figured a healthy Braves a lineup is as good as anyone else's. They didn't really have to go after anybody.
I think this is something. This is something where Bill and I disagree, Philly fanatic. Because I think I would be a yes on Utley, and I think I would be a yes on Bobby Abreu if I were a voter for the current Hall of Fame ballot.
I would lean more toward Chase than Bobby, and I really really liked Bobby, but
Abreu might have been a little bit like Tim Raines, were ahead of his time. Some of the stuff Abreu did wasn't being fully appreciated in the early 2000s. A total, you know, an on base monster, and yeah, it hasn't been the case as much. But
so hopefully they can slide in.
Hope so. Great hearing from you, Philly Fanatic. I think we need one more break, right? Yeah, we've got to get to it right now. Stick with us here on the Tuesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Hour number one just about done. We hated to just sort of cut things short there with the Philly Fanatic, but yeah.
There's the music.
That is, I knew it was about there. That's
we went
we
long. I want to tell folks, in case you missed it, we went long with Andy Burcham in the first segment.
Hopefully you caught that.
If you didn't, the podcast is available as soon as we get done with the show. Podcasts, wherever you listen to podcasts, search for it, Drive with Bill Cameron on your favorite podcasting platform, or go to ESPNAU.com. Podcast presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. Again, big thanks to Andy for joining us at the top of the show.
Absolutely. We're back, hour number two, for the first half of the second hour. Phone lines are open. Then we'll have Jake Crane of Crane and Company at the bottom of the hour. So come on in and join us here on the Tuesday Drive. The eve of what used to be one of the biggest days each year in college football, National Signing Day.
Now, is there anything stopping players? Like, once the early signing period begins, mm-hmm. Can't you sign whenever you want?
No.
Or you have to wait until today?
The early signing period is only 48 hours.
Okay, it's 48 hours.
From that Wednesday through Friday. So, but 90%+ of the signees for Division I schools sign in December over that 48 hours. But this is the period. Auburn fully expecting to add Omar Mabson tomorrow.
So Mabson makes it official.
I think he'll be the only signee for Auburn tomorrow. The only school that I'm hearing is going to sign a significant number of players is going to be North Carolina.
And they've made a pretty significant change since
I would say it's pretty significant.
Yeah, since you know Mack Brown was the coach, right? The last time, you know, when the early signing period happened, and now they've gone out and brought in Bill Belichick, and he's remade the roster in different ways, and maybe he sees some high school players that were waiting that are eager to play for him, or some guys that he thinks have maybe slipped through the cracks. But yeah, interesting that the North Carolina could make some moves tomorrow and bring in some folks to play for their new coaching staff.
Yeah, I wonder. You know, I hadn't really looked. I saw where they were expected to sign a dozen or more players tomorrow. So I wondered how many players they signed back in December. They only signed 11. So that's why they should have plenty of spots. And again,
is one of those players Tom Brady?
No.
Okay.
They did sign a Byron Nelson.
Based on his track record, if one of those players were Tom Brady, I think that they would have a chance of being very good, right? I mean, you think about, you know, Bill Belichick with Tom Brady.
Well, I wonder if Tom could challenge NIL, challenge the NCAA, and say, hey, you know, I could pick up a little more NIL if I was playing college ball.
And you know, and this isn't a slight against Bill Belichick, who is clearly one of the best coaches in the history of the NFL.
No doubt.
I don't know if, but I do wonder if, like, if you were arguing against him being the best ever, I think the case would be, the sample size without Tom Brady is large enough. I mean, between the seasons where he struggled in Cleveland and the season before Brady was the starter when he struggled in New England, and the season when Tom Brady got hurt, he didn't make the playoffs, and the seasons after
after Tom Brady was gone.
Right. Yes. I mean, I do, and the fact that Tom Brady continued winning without Bill Belichick in Tampa. Like, I think that Bill Belichick is clearly, and you can't win without a great quarterback. I think every coach, like everyone you're going to point to as the great, you know, the greatest coach in NFL history is, you know, will have had the services of a very good quarterback. But I do think it's, and that's another reason why this North Carolina thing's really interesting, right? Like, if Bill Belichick were to struggle at North Carolina, it's more less than stellar football. Bill Belichick is coaching without Tom Brady as his quarterback.
And what would that do to his, you know, his reputation, the luster? Would it take some of the fact that it's in college? If he goes and just flops at North Carolina, does it that take away that goat?
It didn't damage Bill Walsh, right, to come back to Stanford and struggle for a couple of years. People hold him in pretty high regard, but there's the rumor that, I'm trying to remember which coach ended up getting this job. I want to say it was around like Jared Lorenzen era Kentucky. So this would have been 20 years ago or so when they had a coaching change. Maybe it's when Rich Brooks got the job, but Bill Parcells was apparently very, very close to taking, this would have been like a post Giants, post Jets. Bill Parcells thought that maybe jumping into the SEC and trying to bring a program from the bottom to the top would have been one of the great challenges in college. And he had, I think he ended up taking the Cowboys job instead that offseason. But the thought of like, wow, you know,
I remember that.
Yeah, so. You know, Parcells maybe. And I guess this is as close as we're going to get to that. Right, you know, crusty old veteran NFL coach.
You're not going to get a bigger name. I mean, you're not going to bring in, no matter who it is that's out there that's going to come in. Andy Reid going to hang it up at the Chiefs I don't know where.
Maybe your basketball team could hire Phil Jackson, right? And then maybe you've got a bigger name there. Although I feel like Randy Newman, you probably shouldn't wait for Phil Jackson.
Don't hold your breath.
He's by the way, you know, he played against Satchel Paige as a young athlete. I was reading some about Phil Jackson Satchel Paige was still barnstorming, very, you know, sort of later in his life. And,
Phil played baseball.
Phil's pretty good baseball. Pretty good pitcher.
I didn't know that.
Pretty good. He's laying it up. Right, he can reach home plate from.
Well, yeah, there have been taller pitchers.
That's true. Although there have also been some pretty good tall pitchers.
There have.
There have been some pretty good ones.
Yeah. So not wow. But
anyways, that was
Belichick in North Carolina expected to sign a dozen or more players tomorrow. The other thing I was saying is you don't have to worry about the 25 anymore. It's only the 85. And it's only the 85 by this fall,
which is the right call. We talked about that before the rule changed, and I mean,
it's crazy because you can have so much turnover, you can lose so many players.
If there's no limit on the number of players you can lose, then you can't put a limit on the number of players you can add. Because if my team, if you take over a roster that loses 50 or 60 players because the previous coach left and it was unpopular, you know, what are you going to tell the new coach? You can only take 20. Yeah, you can only field. No, crazy. Yeah, I mean, it's the right call, but it's still, you know, you can still struggle to manage that roster and have, have things work out. I mean, we've seen some teams that have, I mean, you know, the portal can give and the portal can really take away from a lot of these teams.
Yeah, and we'll see. Now, I mean, you would think that after a couple of years, people would sort of, have an idea of how they want to do it. I mean, I look at Auburn's roster, and I see a roster that appears to be much more on the level of the upper teams in the league. Now they're going to have to prove it on the field. They're going to have to win some ball games, but this is going to be an interesting spring. And how much did you talk much yesterday about Matt Rhule? Some of the comments that more and more coaches are getting into about no spring.
We got into what could be different about hour number two, and I am sort of curious. I mean, there is for the moment a spring window, and Brian was really pessimistic about any chance of it ever going away because there are always going to be players who want to leave.
Possibility of lawsuits.
Yeah, and although I do sort of wonder, like, what's holding the current windows together? If they're so tenuous that, you know, if they're so afraid of the threat of a lawsuit, then why do the current windows exist?
Look, I think if there is an organization, if as a collective group, all the schools say, hey, here are the rules we're going to play by, then I don't know that you're gonna have to be as concerned about losing lawsuits.
Yeah, I don't know
as we currently are.
And if you're worried about violating state law and stuff like that, like I guess you are restricting player movement to a degree by not having a spring window. But if those are the rules, then those are.
All you have to do is graduate, though, that's encouragement to go ahead and graduate if you want to transfer now.
Because it does feel like the spring window is pretty unpopular at the coaching level.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I can't imagine. I mean, sure, if you're able to snare a great player in spring, that's great. But the odds are much more likely that you're going to lose multiple players and your depth is going to be affected.
And the thought that spring football games are advertisements for players who might want to go into the portal and go somewhere else or renegotiate their position with your team. No, that's I could see why that would cause unease among folks in the coaching class. And that's something that Matt Rhule's just got. I mean, Matt Rhule saying that since there's no enforcement of tampering, which I thought was interesting,
right,
in his, you know, since there's going to be no enforcement of tampering, then spring games are sort of a relic of a bygone era in his mind, and he's going to try to do something else this year at Nebraska.
And the way the current NIL system is set up, how can you enforce tampering? Because it's not coming; it doesn't have to come from within.
The tampering rules were written when players weren't allowed to have representation.
Right.
So good luck fixing them in this era, right? Where it's like, okay, a player can have an agent, and a player can have a manager, and a player can have an entertainment lawyer, and a shoe contract, right? A player can have he can have a deal with Adidas or New Balance or Nike, but you're going to restrict, like, who he can talk to before the portal window is officially,
or who any who of those people,
yeah,
can
who
talk
the, who
to.
Those people are going to talk. Just, yeah, it's something I know they try to police it at the professional level. You know, they don't want things happening before free agent is started, but they have, you know, they have accreditation for agents and managers
there's also a period of time that goes on before you're a free agent.
Yeah,
I mean, that's the thing. You're not. I mean, right now, everyone is potentially a free agent at any time.
Leagues have way more power to police that, though,
yes,
between the collective bargaining right. agreements and the fact that leagues, unlike the NCAA and unlike conferences, leagues can throw an agent or a manager out, right? Like, they could say, we're pulling your, you know, we're going to recommend that you're, you know, you're.
They can do that. They can suspend players.
They can, you know, it gets dicier as far as what conferences can do, especially because if you try to enforce it at the conference level, the player can just leave and go to.
I'm going to another conference.
Yeah, just go to another conference where they don't care about that right. sort of stuff. So it's, I can understand how, Matt Rhule, you could sense in the comments from Matt Rhule, it's not that he wants to get rid of his spring game necessarily. It's that in an era where tampering isn't enforced and he could lose significant pieces of his roster to the spring portal window, he has to get rid of this spring football game.
What is one of the catchwords in football by fans? Development, development, development. They want to see players developed. well, okay, let's develop a player through the spring. He plays well in the spring game, and all of a sudden, everybody's bidding for him.
Development is far more tantalizing for college coaches if they know they're getting 2 or 3 years of service out of a player.
They're going to get what they've developed.
I wish there was a trade-off, right, where you could say, all right, if you're coming, because I think players and coaches would benefit from at least in football and men's basketball and women's basketball. If it was understood that when you sign right out of high school, you're guaranteeing 2 years, and maybe that's where contracts come into play, and that's where the dirty word employment starts to become more right. It's probably you should be, and how appropriate, like signing day tomorrow. Like, when you sign that thing, it should probably be your exclusive D1 rights for 2 years in exchange for whatever you're getting in return. But, like, and if you were signing over, now you still have options in that situation. You want to leave, the D2 level is available to you.
Or if you want to leave, then it's back like it was the old days. You could sit out. You could leave and be somewhere else, but you couldn't be eligible to play. I mean, and if you're in that 2-year window.
And you could go to junior college, which right. apparently doesn't count against your eligibility anymore. And if you're
something's got to be done.
And if you're coming straight out of high school, you could even consider prep school for a year and then reopening your recruitment a year later. Like, these options are there, mm-hmm. but the thought of developing a guy, and then after a year he's unhappy about his playing time, or he had a great year, and so he
coached him well. He is so much better than he was, but now the opportunities are better for me elsewhere.
And look, and there are multiple players on Auburn, on the men's basketball team for Auburn, where they were developed at the beginning of their career by someone else, and then went into the portal and improved their position by coming to Auburn.
Fortunately, if you went by your 2-year idea, I don't know of anybody at Auburn that was just one year at some place and then moved. I think Auburn's at least waited and seen what guys can do for a couple of years before they have brought them in, at least on this current team, right?
Yeah. Did Janai do two years at Morehead? Yeah, yeah. Janai would be the one that I was thinking, but Janai, no, you're right. Everybody else, you're right. It's still to me like it has benefited the basketball team, but it's still not. It discourages coaches from taking chances on projects.
Oh yes, absolutely.
And I think that's too bad. In a sport where so many of those projects become incredible stories.
Mm-hmm. All right, we need to get to our first break here of hour number 2. 334-321-1390, that's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. Come on in and join us.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive, 22 minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Tuesday afternoon. Great to say again. It's after 5:15 and the sun's not gone down. That is nice.
Sun will be down when Auburn and Oklahoma tip off.
It better be, or something's really tonight. Something's really strange.
Yeah, or the button has been pushed. Auburn and Oklahoma, 8 p.m. on the SEC Network.
Right. That is following the Vandy Florida game. That, as you said a while ago, I mean, Vandy was ranked just a week ago. It has been crazy watching these watching SEC teams move into the rankings and drop out, and others sort of seem to be moving up. Arkansas and Texas look like a couple of teams that have the opportunity. Arkansas had been a huge disappointment, and then they go in and just spanked Kentucky over the weekend. They've got some talent. I mean, Cal's got a little talent there at Arkansas.
Auburn clinched a winning record in SEC play with its fifth road win in league play against Ole Miss on Saturday.
Yeah, clinched a winning record on the road.
Yeah, winning record in SEC play on the road. They're going to win at least 5 of their 9 SEC games. Tonight is the fourth home conference game of the season. Auburn has already beaten Missouri. They've already beaten State. They've already beaten Tennessee at home. Auburn, I believe it's just a handful of undefeated Januaries in program history.
Oh yeah,
and absolutely. And with I think Bruce has only had one season where he went 9-0 in conference play at home. The Jabari and Walker team, I want to say, did it. So it's been.
It's still going to be tough.
It's going to be tough. Oh, it's going to be very tough. You've got, you know, a couple of the best teams to ever come into Neville Arena, by the numbers in Florida, and then you've got
Florida will be number six, and Alabama should still be in the top five. I mean, you look at Alabama's schedule here over the next couple of weeks, and I think Alabama's got an easier road up to that, to the matchup there in Tuscaloosa at Coleman, but. Auburn, Alabama's got a tough stretch, but Auburn closes things out with at Kentucky, at Texas A&M before Alabama comes in.
Well, and Alabama's sitting there saying if Alabama, you know, if they were to win out, if Alabama were to win the rest of their games, they would be alone in first place that in the SEC at 17-1, because that means they would have beaten Auburn
twice,
both in Tuscaloosa and in Auburn. And you think about that scenario. Regardless of who wins the second matchup, if you had a pair of 16-1 SEC teams playing for the championship, and it's winner take all.
Yep.
Because you'd have a 17-1 team and a 16-2 team. First of all, the thought that you're a 16-2 team
and don't win the conference,
that doesn't win the SEC regular season title, would be madness. But there's a path. If Auburn and Alabama were to keep winning, and if Alabama were to win that first matchup in Tuscaloosa, and it's not, I mean, there are some tough road games for both teams along the way, but it's not all that far fetched, and it's becoming more real with every week and with every victory. Can't overlook teams like Oklahoma and of course, you know, the other matchups you have in February, but if Auburn keeps this thing rolling, you could have some historic basketball in February and March.
Yeah, Alabama has the midweek off this week. I believe South Carolina is the other team that doesn't play this midweek. But tonight's matchups.
Do they have Ole Miss on Saturday, or I may have had that wrong.
I was thinking that their next two are like Arkansas and Texas on the road. I think. Yeah, Alabama.
I'll check on that.
Alabama's at Arkansas Saturday.
Okay, that's right.
And then they're at Texas next Tuesday before Auburn goes to Coleman the following Saturday. So
big opportunity for Arkansas coming off that win against.
It really is. It really is
against Kentucky.
Arkansas is at Texas.
Yep.
Tomorrow night. Like I said, I mean the only ranked matchup in SEC play this midweek is the Missouri-Tennessee game. It seemed like Saturday we had. I guess over the last week we've had three or four at least.
Well, isn't the matchup isn't Ole Miss tonight? Aren't they playing they're playing a ranked opponent? Aren't they? What's the other men's game tonight?
Vandy, Florida. Kentucky, Ole Miss.
Okay,
sure is.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ole Miss is 25. That's right.
So Kentucky, Ole Miss is also a top 25 matchup, and
that's pretty big for Kentucky now after that loss.
Yes, it is. You got to shake that off, and what's. Look, whatever.
Ole Miss knows if they lose, they're out of the top 25 next week.
Yeah, and Ole Miss is a team that, you know, if they can, especially, I mean, look, Kentucky's going to have to play some defense, and that hasn't necessarily been.
That has not been their strong point. And that's what you thought. I mean, I remember we were talking in the preseason. You felt like that's probably going to be their strong suit.
Well, it's what they prioritized. Defense. It's what they prioritized in the portal. I mean, these are guys who are all defense at their respective conferences. There's like three different Kentucky players who were defensive player of the year, who have won that award at some point in their college basketball careers. But this Kentucky team, it's almost like they're just sort of stalling on defense and waiting for the possession to get over so they can go back and score. And they can score.
Yes, they can.
They can score. Well, they can score more when they have the full assortment of players. Whatever's going on with Lamont Butler, it's sort of, you have the coach talking in riddles as far as when he could be back. You know, it's, you know, the mind starts to wonder.
They did pretty well in Knoxville without him.
They did do pretty well in Knoxville, but then
they go home.
Followed up with a shocking loss.
That's what's been
crazy. Arkansas,
and that's where so much credit to Auburn, how they've been able to, through all this craziness that we've seen across the country. I mean, you can't. I mean, you feel like you've got teams figured out, and you really know. Then you see Iowa State lose on the the buzzer beater, and then they get blasted. Kansas just absolutely blows them out. I mean, teams seem to be so up and down this year, and Auburn's been able to, thus far, you know, weather the storms.
Yeah, we'll see if that continues. I mean, that's championship metal. I mean, if you can, if you can, you can absorb a big punch and stay in the fight. And Auburn does that over and over again. You know, whether it's when these teams go on these runs and apply the pressure. Auburn is so good at applying the pressure, but when other teams start to do it, Auburn has an answer. You know, and you go back to earlier in conference play, Texas with that run at the end of the second half, South Carolina. The whole game, you know, like these, you know, Auburn has faced this down, and it's a very impressive. I mean, after the most impressive stretch of non-conference basketball Auburn has ever played, you have a most impressive start to league play.
334-321-1390. That's the drive hotline. Now you'd gotten a little note from Jake Crane. I was mentioning a while ago that we're hoping to have him on. We usually do, but he's got a meeting. He's in a meeting, so
I think we'll have Drew try him during the commercial break.
We will check and see if we can get Jake. If not, we've got some audio from Bruce we can run. Of course, we'd love to hear from you as we continue here with the Tuesday Drive.
To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. As the sun about to go down here on this Tuesday evening, we're a couple of hours away from the pregame for the Auburn-Oklahoma matchup over at Neville Arena, and of course that's coming up over on Wings 94.3. Our buddy Jake Crane has been in meetings today, and we may be able to get him before we run out of time here before the end of the show, but he's still busy as of a few minutes ago, so we'll check back in with him. Oh, by the way, did you mention our other good friend and the news about Barrett?
No, we did not talk about Barrett yesterday.
Barrett Salee, of course, we said he had told us he'd be out for a couple of weeks as he prepares to make a move in his career. Barrett, congratulations to Barrett, as he is now your pre- and post-game radio host for the Atlanta Braves Radio Network.
Very exciting, yeah. The Barrett is officially part of the team.
He couldn't be more excited working with, I mean, a team that he has – you know, loved his whole life.
I know he's done some podcast work with the Braves, and yeah, Dickey Broadcasting bringing him on board the Atlanta Braves Radio Network. Really, really excited for our pal to be getting the call.
Yeah, how about that? And hopefully, he'll still have a little time for us. And I believe we'll be able to figure that out. Since we don't have Jake right now, we mentioned, you know, Bruce Pearl met with the media yesterday as the Tigers were in preparation and getting ready for their matchup against Oklahoma tonight. So we thought we'd let you hear some of Bruce's comments.
So once again, we find ourselves where I'm going to be talking up an opponent, and you're going to be rolling your eyes, yeah. But I'm going to do it anyways. That's not a criticism. You know, Oklahoma's 13-0. I think they were ranked. They won the Battle for Atlantis. I think they were ranked 12th or 13th at one point. And of course, they started conference play and lost a few games. But they've won three out of the last four in conference. And so, if you look at who in our league has won three out of the last four, Alabama, us, maybe just Oklahoma. Maybe there could be another one. I don't know. But I think they're coming in playing well. This is an outstanding offensive team. Fears is a great story. This summer, we were recruiting him. I got to know his dad a little bit. His brother went to Michigan State, and his dad always said that this one coming up was special. His older son's special too, also very special kid. this one, his Jeremiah's got a little bit more size and length. And so I'm watching him play last summer in Peach Jam. He played this past summer as a high school, going to be a senior. I mean, he was destroying everybody. And so, you know, obviously we're recruiting him for the future, you know, for next year, right? And next thing you know, he reclassifies and he's going to Oklahoma. It was reclass and go to Oklahoma. That thing was done deal. And wow, right? You talk about Oklahoma's roster turning around in a heartbeat. He is on the draft boards, is potentially a top 10, 15 pick. Of any scouting report. With two Alabama kids, two starters. And, you know, we offered and wanted Duke Miles. And he chose. And the young man that was at Georgia Tech that was Miles' teammate, leading scorer in our league, is a tough cover. He's a really, really tough cover. Yeah, Jalen Moore, and really having a great year. Having a great year. You know, Miles remembered him being a good player, great athlete, but had and really developed. And again, a really tough cover. Undersized power forward. They're number one in two-point percentage. They're number one in three-point percentage. They're ranked in free-point percentage. It's a really, really good offensive team, and coach does a great job. I think he's very innovative. Porter Mosier is very innovative offensively. You know, they shot 73% in the second half against Vanderbilt in their last game. So they're obviously offensively. So it may not have been. At the beginning of the season, you would circle as a home game, you know, matchup, a Tuesday night against Oklahoma. But they're 38 in the net. That team's kidding. Huh?
I've still got to research.
Okay. And so we know Alabama did, because we play them every year. Kentucky, maybe. I don't think Ole Miss was. I mean, I'm just saying that this could be the. You know, if I can only think of one or two teams that came in last year with a better net than 38, it tells you, you know, how great the league is. So, questions. I thought, you know, obviously Padua did a fantastic job, and they did a great job of having him. But I think Oklahoma's got three dynamic guards that are all small, quick, and all can blow by you. You know, Fears, Miles, and number one, and those three guys are all really hard covers and all really hurt us. You know, this will be now again, having played Wednesday, Saturday, and now Tuesday. This is our third game in 6 days. And so yesterday lifted. We were on the floor for 30 to 45 minutes, and that was it. And trying to get fresh, and hopefully the guys come in today, the day before a game, but we're going to have to today.
Bruce, I wanted to ask about the practice facility plan, sort of getting options on Neville instead. I know you've said previously you know NIL was a big focus for you even over the facility. I guess what were your thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, grateful to the board and to our athletes wanting to continue to upgrade this phenomenal facility. And so I'd like to have a standalone, state-of-the-art basketball facility. Of course, I'd be disingenuous if I said that we would love to have that. But when NIL came in, at the same time that our new practice facility was approved, and I think it was even before John Cone was the AD, I immediately looked at it and said, you know, we've got plans that we were in a situation was coming. You know, we knew that stadium had some things that were coming. And I just looked at it all at that time when NIL first came out and said, I just don't think we can do this right now. I mean, or whether we should do this right now, because we're going to need to fund our student athletes in all sports. Most of it was going to be on, and advertisers and people that were wanted to potential, to then ask them at the same time for a brand new state-of-the-art practice facility.
You know, and as we sort of break in here while Bruce is responding there, that's really interesting. I mean, I was a little surprised when Bruce made that announcement a while back, but you still get the feeling that I mean, sure, this is acceptable, but Bruce would love to have he'd love to have the standalone practice facility. But I also, you know, sense a little bit of frustration that Auburn is not, you know, right there at the top of the league as far as basketball NIL. And you've got to wonder, you know, how can they be and still expect to be, you know, right there at the top in football. I think you had a good point while we were listening to that, Dan.
I mean, there aren't very many programs that recruit at a national championship level in both football and men's basketball, especially right now when resources like NIL are being pulled in different directions. I think it's never been harder to compete mm-hmm. at a championship level in both sports, in both football and men's basketball, and sometimes difficult decisions might have to be made as far as where resources go.
This is one of those. I mean, you know, the building, remember, it was a race, the facilities race, felt like an arms race, and now everybody is having to reconsider that where is that money going to be best utilized?
What, wasn't it just a few months after the facility was approved? When Bruce Pearl talked about how it was more important for folks to donate to the NIL collective than the university's general fund, because being able to make a competitive NIL offer had rocketed to the top of the list of priorities if you're recruiting top tier men's college basketball players. It wasn't about the bells and whistles of, I mean, you
need those now. You don't need to have some dump.
The longer we go, and it's because our audience, you know, we do have younger folks in our audience. I know it. And the fact that you think about, like, okay, pre 2019 is now what you're talking about when you're talking about the NIL era, mm-hmm. right? You're talking, I mean, 2019, 2020 or
pretty
so.
Pretty much pre-COVID.
We're getting to where it's, you know, it's been years and years. It's like, if you want to, you know, you read about, like, Willie Williams's recruitment, right, Bill? Like the journals and the different, you know, the restaurants and the campus tour and the workout room and all that. It's like, that's what it used to be.
Oh yeah, if you had, you know, there were bowling alleys at places, and you know, the waterfalls and things like that.
But now you can write down a number on a piece of paper, mm-hmm. and you can say, what about this? Now, whether or not that number actually shows up in somebody's checking account is a different battle. Leonard Hamilton retiring this week.
Yep.
By the way, Florida State, remember that story from earlier this season where there were seven or eight players from last year's team still waiting for that NIL check to clear. But no, I can understand why a coach would be, you know, it's less of a priority. You know, you don't want raggedy facilities. You don't want things that are, you know, run down and you know, should be condemned or anything like that. But you also don't necessarily need
that's
to.
That's not the selling point.
No,
that it used to be.
It's not. Yeah, it's not the only way to attract players like it was a couple of years ago. And now I can see why a coach who's forward thinking, you know, it's going to be more about it's more about that competitive offer on the NIL space than ever before. Now I heard people wondering, post Bruce, could the lack of a practice facility impact Auburn's ability to lure top tier coaches and players and things like that. And we'll see, but that's...
It might, but, I mean, you have to be more concerned with... I mean, you'd love to know that, oh, 10 years from now, that's not going to be a problem, but you better be more concerned about the talent that you're trying to bring in right now.
If Bruce is upset about the fact that the plans have changed with the practice facility, he has not let on.
No,
in the press conferences at all.
No. All right, we better go ahead and get to our final break of the afternoon. If we've got time, we can let you hear a little more of Bruce. But again, we'd love to hear from you here on the Tuesday Drive. Experience and knowledge from the pros.